Hey, how's it going?
Sounds like you guys are having some fun.
Yeah, no, this is a new experience for us, so we're having some fun with it. We're just like sitting in a room together, all on our phones, kind of like looking at each other.
That's what we call family time.
Yeah.
Awesome. You know, it's funny, a lot of bands, like I know even my band, we wind up getting together mostly just for rehearsals and playing shows. But it sounds like you guys like to hang out together and kick it too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of hard to speak when I can also hear myself right after. But it feels like sometimes the shows are just like a good excuse for us to kind of like get together a couple hours before and just like hang out and bool.
Yeah, I mean, the way that a band's going to stay together is if you guys really enjoy each other's company. If it's just about the music, it's hard to make that work with, you know, especially with strong personalities.
Like, we were all friends before we were in the band, like, different. So we're just going to keep it that way.
And
play
good.
Yeah, no, we definitely find other opportunities to like hang out other than shows and stuff. But you know, I'm sure you can relate where like sometimes it feels like you like come to practice or something. You're like, we're not even really practicing. We're just kind of having fun together, and like some music is involved.
Yeah. Well, sometimes we go to practice and we just wind up talking and, like, hanging out and talking for, you know, an hour and a half or 2 hours. It's like, where the hell did that time go? And then it's like, oh, well, we better get down to playing if we want to get anything done.
Yeah, but that's its own kind of practice, you know. You're just practicing, you know, interacting with each other and stuff. I feel like that's still, like, beneficial in a way, you know.
Totally. I really feel like music is just almost another way of having a conversation with people.
Yeah, I totally get that. I kind of see it the same way. It also, or like, it can also be a way to like initiate a conversation with people, you know? And like when you've got like, well, in our case, three other people who like, you know, we all end up sharing the similar interest in, you know, our band. So like, it helps to, you know, everyone has like a common goal to strive for. So it helps strengthen our bonds, you know.
So why don't, just so that everybody who might be listening to this can get a sense of like each of your voices and who you are, if you could just kind of go around the room. And each of you guys sort of introduce yourself, say, you know, what instrument you play, and, you know, just maybe tell us something about yourself, like we're in first grade or something.
Okay. I guess I'll start, since I've been the most talkative so far. This voice belongs to Griffin Lowe. I play the bass for the Furnettes, and one thing about me is I speak English and Spanish, and a little bit of German.
A little bit of German.
Can you introduce yourself to all our Spanish-speaking and German fans, too?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, bienvenidos. Me llamo Griffin. Yo toco la guitarra de base para the Furnettes.
It's bajo. Okay. Yo toco el bajo.
Okay, well, I think now we're getting into semantics. Entonces, hallo, ich heiße Griffin. Ich spiele... That's about it for the German. I'm sorry. Like I said, a little bit of German.
Just a little bit.
I guess I'll go next. I'm Sean. I play guitar and I sing in the Furnettes. I think Griffin had like three cool things.
like English, Spanish, and German. I'm not very good at any of those, so yeah. I think I'll pass it.
I'm Curtis. I play the drums for the Furnace. Curtis Kunkel is my full name, in case you were wondering. And my fun fact is I don't have a belly button.
What?
Yep. Yeah, I just have like a 5-inch scar on my chest where it was.
I can confirm it right now if you'd like.
Sean likes to tell everyone it shows.
It's a party trick.
All right, we're going to have an explanation of that.
So I was born with my intestines on the outside of my body. This is the long and short of it.
He actually just didn't want it, so he just, like, dropped it from her.
I'm really big into body modification.
Wow, you're the first person I've ever met or talked to that didn't have a belly button. That's awesome.
Sweet. That you know of.
I'm glad I could
that
be
I know
here
of.
For that
yeah,
experience
I,
for you.
I
you never know.
Check. I don't check for everybody I meet. So
maybe you should.
Yeah, maybe now you'll start.
Alright, and Chris.
It's Chris's turn.
Yeah, so my name is Chris Castro. I play guitar in the Furnace, and I stole Curtis's belly button.
And what'd you do with it?
I added it to my own. So now it's just like a giant crater.
It would be kind of cool to have multiple belly buttons.
Where would the second one go? Like, where would you put it?
I don't know, probably in my back. So that it would look like it like went through.
That's not one, but two extra places to clean.
Okay, call me crazy, but I would kind of want to put it on, like, one of my index fingers so I could just freak everyone out always.
Yeah.
And point at them
because then,
like, oh, my God.
Then you could pee out of your finger.
I don't think you know.
I don't think that's how it works.
I don't think Sean knows how peeing works.
Dude, everyone knows the most optimal position is parallel to your nipple.
Oh.
Yeah. You got a point there.
Yeah, no, Castro, I can't argue with you on that one. That's bulletproof.
Or you should replace
the nipple. If maybe they were just next to each other and you could, like, you know, draw them like eyes or glasses or something like that. Yeah, that could be cute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I don't know if you guys know much about my show, so I'll sort of introduce myself and explain the show a little bit to you. I'm Andy Kyler. The show is called Jams for Man. It's basically a musical history of Northern Virginia. And I was born and raised in Reston. And graduate of South Lakes High School, class of 95.
Oh, wow.
And,
that's the year I was born.
And attended several Jam for Man concerts. And those were some of the first concerts I ever went to on my own without my parents there. And the first ones that I ever went to that were real concerts in Reston, and the first ones where I saw guys that, like, you know, grew up in Reston and were in high school and were playing in bands and were rocking the shit out of the community center right in front of me.
You should play at the community center, guys. I know people there. I work there.
You work there?
Yeah, I lifeguard there.
Oh, holy shit.
I
should have talked to you a while ago when I was trying to set up the anniversary show.
Oh, man, that would have been great. I've been talking to the theater people forever about actually holding, like, concerts and stuff.
I tried. They weren't particularly receptive, and I think that that's probably because they remember what it was like at Jam for Man. And, you know, it was the coolest thing that ever happened in Reston. And you can imagine how, you know, adults felt about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the the show is kind of a tribute to the name is a tribute to Jam for Man. And, you know, it gives me an excuse to go back and find the people from those bands and talk to them about their music and play their music once again for people and kind of catalog the history of all these bands that played in Northern Virginia and were awesome that in some respects time has just forgotten or has moved on from because a lot of their music was on, you know, tape or on record. It hasn't been digitized. It was on like VHS for their performances. And so the, you know, the internet hasn't been a good record of all of this. So I'm trying to amend that. But lost in that musical history are some of the recent bands that have come out of Reston also. And so I know that the listeners want to hear and have talked about, we've talked about on past shows, you know, what it's like for current bands that come from Reston and what it was like in the new millennium for bands to start and play there.
Mm-hmm. Tough.
I mean, well, like, it's well, like, hearing your whole, I feel like it's cheapening it to call it a spiel, but, like, you know, everything that you just said, you know, like, when you compare what we've had to do to, like, bands that actually have to worry about things, like, you know, if all of their music is on tape, then they're not going to be, like, it, you know, that's only going to last for so long. It's only able to be distributed so far. You know, compare that to us where we just, like, you know, like, Sean, Aaron, and I, we were, like, 16, 17, and we recorded a whole EP with just some freeware and a couple of mics and stuff, and then we were able to put it on the internet, and it was freaking everywhere, you know, immediately, pretty much, you know. It makes it feel like we got it a little easy, you know?
It's a beautiful day to walk outside. It's a lovely day to tell me you love me. And if you say you do, I'll go insane. My brains. Tell me now or hold your breath. On my way to the gates of hell. Tell me you don't. Tell me you don't love me like that. I know that we're just friends.
Don't you understand?
I can't be apart like this.
Don't you understand?
Your boyfriend, he's all right.
I think being from the Nova scene in general kind of has a weird place in East Coast music and Nashville music because it's sandwiched between like DC, which is like home of, you know, hardcore, really like really great hardcore scene, really great punk scene, and now even like really good indie scene. And you have Richmond, who are kind of blossoming in their own right. They've always been like a small scene with indie, which is like kind of hard genre, and then of course it's like noir. I mean,
and Lamb of God.
Lamb of God, like D'Angelo was born in Richmond, even though he's like a New York musician. So, in terms of like the scene and stuff, I think it is a bit harder for Nova kids to kind of get a grip on like booking shows and making connections.
Yeah, you're right. That's true.
Well, one of the things that you guys have over us is, you know, we didn't really know what we were doing at all. There was no template for how to do any kind of recording, what gear to buy, or how to book shows, how to do a tour, anything like that. It was really hard to get all of that information. We had a lack of information. There was no place to go to find that stuff out. The only place that you could go were to older bands and other guys who had done it and talk to them and find out from them what they were doing.
There's one thing the internet's good for, it's for finding information. So,
yeah, that's definitely, just having the internet in our back pocket. When we started book shows, you know, I'd just type into Google, like, how to book shows. If you have zero fans, like, stuff like that. I mean, we would still, like, ask people in bands for help, but it wasn't, like, that wasn't the first and only channel that, or avenue that we could take. So we've been really leaning on the internet as far as kind of everything goes, releasing music, how to bring people to shows, how to be a good band, which we're still not sure we've taken the how-tos to heart yet, but, you know, hopefully we'll get there.
It's very flattering that she said that we know what we're doing.
Well, I mean, I got it. I really like the music that you guys are putting out. You know, I wouldn't have you on the show if I didn't think that you guys were making cool music. So that's your calling card. That's where it all starts. You know, when people hear you, it's one thing for them to hear the name, and you get them to your music where they can listen to something. But then, you know, the music has to be there for any sort of relationship with the listener to go any further at all. Now, that first song that they hear has to draw them in, or they'll, you know, most people, there are so many other bands to listen to. There's so much music that you could try out. Why bother with something that just sounds bad?
I like to think that people might find out about us through our music that's recorded, but really we're at our best when we're playing live. Like, I think a lot of bands that are, like, low budget and get their music out online, it really pays to try and see them in person because it's going to sound a lot better there than it does on whatever cheap recording equipment they're using to put it online. And it's a more complete version of whatever that vision is at that time.
Live music being just better most of the time.
Yeah, live music.
Yeah. It's powerful. Like that's what it's there for. It's there to, you know, develop that connection with people where you're in the moment and you're with one another. But back in the day, a lot of bands, like, you know, I discovered so many bands because they were opening or playing other shows with other people, or friends were just like, you know, we're going out to see this band, come out and check out this show. And, you know, back then you would have to, you know, you'd have to buy a CD or buy the tape of the band or hear them on the radio in order to hear them. Or maybe somebody like dubbed you a tape and handed you a tape of it. But there was no, you know, there was no streaming of music. So if you wanted to hear somebody, you had to just go and check it out.
Yeah. I think nowadays, when you look at kind of people who, I'm just going to point to like bedroom pop in particular, because they have a lot of success with making a video low budget and making a song really low budget on GarageBand, putting it out, getting, you know, a million views and, you know, headlining national tours. I think there are a small group of people who do search for local music on streaming services and, you know, like maybe local stores, real grocery stores and stuff like that. I think it's still like local scenes still kind of are built upon and stem from people going to shows. Because like when you think of it, like, you know, no one's looking for a band from Reston. Maybe people who are in other bands or from touring bands who are coming through Reston, maybe you need a show, or in that weird space between DC and Richmond or somewhere on the East Coast and you need a show. Like, but as far as like your average, I don't say consumer, but you know, average music listener, I don't think they're like searching out local music. They kind of get behind local artists more when they see them having success. And I think that's kind of a, not, I don't say a problem, but it's kind of like a pattern we've noticed.
Well, so just tell me a little bit about those of you that did grow up in Reston. What was your experience like just growing up in Reston, like in the 2000s?
Well, I loved it.
Yeah, Reston's great. Definitely.
Yeah. Like, you know, I feel like most people go through that phase at some point where they're like, I hate this town. I got to leave.
Not even.
Congratulations. But anyway, like, you know, at some point, you know, you can get a little tired of it. But then, like, as I've gotten even older, I'm just kind of like, wait a second, Reston is actually a wonderful place.
For real.
And I'm truly, like, grateful to have grown up in such a great area.
I definitely agree. I just remember, like, I played around outside all the time when I was a kid, like, running around on the golf course. And then as I got older, I worked at all the pools in Reston. So I had, like, a pretty long, extensive, like, a relationship with the Reston Association that runs everything. But it's a really nice place.
I will say, though, everyone here does say they're, like, from Reston. But most people are born in Fairfax. I was born and raised in Reston.
Born in Reston Hospital, taken a couple miles away, and then raised in the rest of Reston. That's what I, that's, yeah.
I'm a charlatan. I was born in D.C. and then moved here when I was, like, 2. Oh. I can't remember not living in Reston, to be fair.
And what were any of the downsides of Reston? I mean, did you guys have, you know, situations of bullying or dealing with the cops or, you know, anything like that?
Curtis definitely got bullied.
Nah, man. I'm good. Cops suck. Reston is like a white people paradise. So you take that for its ups and its downs, I guess. That's Reston. It's full of lobbyists and lawyers.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Reston is pretty expensive. You know, I guess that wasn't really a downside growing up because that didn't affect me too much because, you know, a child doesn't handle finances. But, like, I mean, other than that, I can't really think of too much. I don't know. I feel like sometimes there's, like, a bit of a disconnect between, like, Reston and the rest of Nova in, like, one way or another. I don't know how much that really has impacted, like, my development. Like, I had plenty of good times in Reston / Herndon. Like, I mean, Reston was great, too. But.
And where did you guys go to shows?
Shows? I think probably most of the concerts I went to really not in Reston. Now that I think about it, there's not many, very many venues, but like Jiffy Lube Live used to be the Nissan Pavilion. A couple places in D.C. or like rarely Jam and Java in Vienna would be the places I would go see music around here.
I have fond memories of seeing Bowling for Soup at Jam and Java when I was like 14. Also Jiffy Lube Live, though. That was like the first place I went to for a show. That was also great. It was Blink-182 and My Chemical Romance. I was pretty happy with that. That's the problem. Is like there aren't too many actual like venues or places to see music that like might resonate with me. In like the immediate Reston area. But then, you know, like now that the metro's built in really and everything, like DC's not far away at all, and
there are plenty of places there.
Yeah, and that's why Griffin now has a venue at his house.
Oh, yeah.
And remember, we didn't have the Metro in Reston either.
No,
yeah.
It's right next to my house. I wish they had a whole time they were building it.
Yeah, we had to go all the way to Vienna if we wanted to take the Metro anywhere.
Oh, like West Falls Church.
Oh, my gosh.
What do you guys know of any of those other bands from Reston? Do you know anything of the history of Jam for Man or any of the bands that came before you?
When I think of a band, like, with people from Reston, like, that went to South Lakes that I listen to and I know of, I think of Red, Gold, Green. I mean, they got pretty popular. They had a relationship with, like, Pharrell, and they make really awesome, like, go-go fusion music, and I know at most, if not all, of their members went to South Lakes.
Church, but I believe in souls. Never see me stable, so I'm on the road. Tryna map out my life now without a legend. Any night up in the party, feel like Armageddon. When I look at my reflection, there's another face. Only thing I ever do is fucking run away. Run away, run away, fucking run away. Run away, run away, fucking run away. Run away, run away, fucking run away. Run away, run away. If I die tonight,
when I'm, like, thinking of, like, things I could have witnessed in Reston, as far as, like, a music scene goes, I really wish I was here for, like, the OG Lollapalooza.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
That was 3 years before I was there. I think the video of it on YouTube, Pearl Jam going up for their set, and I'm just like, damn, I wish I was there.
You didn't know I was there?
No, dude.
There's 4,000 people there.
What? That's crazy.
That's why, like, you can't do shows at, like, Fairfax anymore.
Oh, wow.
it's funny, actually. During the general election, our friend's band was trying to set up kind of a rally against Trump. And so they were going to try and have it at Southgate Community Center. And everything was going fine. And then someone from Reston Patch posted something about the show, just in like a good-hearted way, just like, hey, you know, this is happening, come out if you'd like. But it got so much backlash that Southgate Community Center actually backed out of it, and we were, like, trying to find other venues to do that. And we were like, what about Lake Fairfax? And they were like, oh, no, we cannot do Lake Fairfax. They won't do anything ever since Lollapalooza.
Yeah, they won't allow any electrified music.
It's a damn shame.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah.
We're doing an acoustic set. It looks like 100 guitars.
So tell me about the beginnings of your band. I think it was just two of you, and not even and Aaron was a guy that's not even still with you anymore, right? So it was just Sean, you, and that dude Aaron.
Yeah, so it was me and my best friend, Aaron, and we just kind of, well, we had been in a band with Griffin prior, actually, so we knew Griffin from that, but me and Aaron started jamming, and we didn't really expect anything to come out of it, and then I was like, you know what, maybe I can sing, if I try hard enough, and, you know, I think I'm almost there. But time will tell. But it was me and Aaron jamming, went through some bassists, found Griffin. We actually played a show at Griffin's old band, also from Reston, and they broke up soon after, and Griffin was like, you guys need a bassist, and we were like, yeah, and we miss you, and we love you. So Griffin came over, joined the band, and Aaron left soon after, and Curtis joined.
And why did Aaron leave?
It was just like a time thing. It wasn't like, I mean, we're still all like best buddies.
He's like two rooms over right now. He's in the living room.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, I think he wanted to focus on school, and he had some other stuff he had to take care of. So, Curtis kind of came along. Curtis was in Thailand.
I was in Taiwan when you guys invited me into the band. I was like, sweet. My last band like broke up 3 weeks earlier.
And how are those first batch of songs kind of different from what you guys are playing now?
Oh, the first batch of songs is terrible.
Oh, he's wrong. They're wonderful. They're just different.
So the first time I ever heard them, I was playing in my other band, and we were all playing a show together at this, like, music studio, I guess. And I heard the Furnettes. I really wasn't a fan until I joined the band. And then I listened to the music a lot more, and I was like, okay, this is really good. And then I was there in the room for a lot of recording of the original EP. It was cool. I like it.
I will say, I was the last one to join the band, and I bumped that, EP all summer long.
Yeah, Chris was the last to join the band, but he was the first fan, and...
Mm-hmm.
I will never forget that. But to, kind of describe more how, the music has changed, I don't know. I think a lot of it's just that not only have we developed as musicians, but we've, I mean, we're not listening to the same stuff we were listening to however long ago it was that we did that. I don't really want to think about that right now. We have new influences to draw off of. We kind of see that we're capable of doing, the bare minimum for song building, but now we're like, okay, what else can we add to this? Like, what can we do to make this music that we enjoy even more?
Not to mention, but thanks to a lot of our good friends, the recordings themselves have gotten a lot better with each release.
Oh, for sure.
The quality of the actual recordings is much, much better.
So the album we put out, Fear Not, that was all kind of recorded very DIY in Griffin's basement with a couple of our friends. And then that was a long process of us just sitting in front of a computer and kind of figuring out how stuff worked. And then this new song we actually just put out, that was kind of, songwriting-wise, that was more us pushing ourselves. And we're releasing a new album soon, but I mean, that's kind of a result of us pushing ourselves as musicians and songwriters, kind of saying okay, we can, we can write verse, chorus, but more, how can we take it to the next level and still make it more, enjoyable and dynamic? And how can we kind of tap into each other's talents as musicians?
Your friend that you recorded with is also in a band, right? He's in, I'm going to screw up the pronunciation of this band, but Roos de Guerre?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nailed it.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce his name.
Hafa Tu Ngalu.
How did he help you with the recording?
I'd say he's the engineer as well as the producer.
Yeah, so for Fear Not, he was the one who was recording all of the tracks for us, and he was doing the production. And then we have another friend, Nate Graves, who... Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. So for Fear Not, Hoppe did the mixing too, right?
Yeah, he did the mixing too.
So Hoppe did a lot of the actual sound engineering for Fear Not, and then the mastering process, we did that over to our good friend Nate Graves.
The producer role with us is, I think with us a little less defined than other, I don't want to say other bands, because that's not we're not like the other bands, but a lot of producer roles I feel like are one dug in and one person. So that's kind of all of us just basically shitting on to the sound engineer what would sound good, and then like the sound engineer slash producer, I guess, kind of being like, okay, like 8 of your ideas out of 10 are terrible, but maybe these 2 will work.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how the producer role is developed on this, I think.
Yeah, it felt like a bit of a like a big powwow, basically. It was like, okay, so we know we need something extra here. What would fit best? And then, you know, we listen to it some more and mess around with different things. One of us says, hey, maybe we can do this. And Hoppus says, hey, I added like a MIDI organ here. What do you think of it? And we would go, oh, this is great. Or, oh, this is not as great, but I like where it's going. Maybe we can do this thing or that thing. It was really collaborative at the end of the day, I think, for like a lot of the parts of the album.
And were you guys listening to a lot of early 90s music? Were you listening to, I don't know, Weezer or Pavement?
But a lot of that influence from the start, especially for Fear Not, was definitely like Weezer, those like kind of early 90s alt-rock bands, even the 2000s alt-rock bands. Like, I think a lot of people don't want to admit in our genre, like, yeah, like fucking like Three Doors Down, you know, Hinder, like Hoobastank.
I hear some of the Strokes too.
Yeah.
Especially
oh, yeah.
on like the second song.
Is that Dreams?
I think that's Dreams.
Yeah, Dreams.
I will say, before I let anyone continue, is so they let me hear the song early before I was in the band, and the first thing I said was that Sean sounded like Julian Casablancas in that song. So just I called it.
Tell me your story, oh, please don't be boring. I'll share you a secret if you do that for me. I promise I like you, no, really, I love you. You tell me you want me, well, baby, you got me.
Have that like low voice and sort of that you know that very dry straightforward delivery.
Yeah, I was going for Ella Fitzgerald, but you know.
Yeah, for Dreams specifically, that was one of the songs that while we were like coming up for like the different parts of it, I was like, this sounds really Strokesy, so I should really probably just like follow that main guitar line and just like feel that deal.
The first time I ever heard the Furnace, I heard She Don't Understand on El Dorado, and I thought the lead guitar during the chorus, it reminded me of Reptilia by the Strokes, and that was like the first Furnace song I ever heard.
Yeah, well, I love the Strokes personally, but it feels like they've gotten a bad rap to some extent, and you know, people don't always cite them as an influence. It's cool to hear you guys like that, because in the early 2000s, you know, they were huge, and you
yeah.
couldn't go anywhere without
in the mid 2000s.
Yeah. And they also, both of those bands put on great live shows.
Mm-hmm.
I saw both of those bands live, and you know, they were amazing.
I think with that kind of music, in terms of great live shows, I think Cage the Elephant really took that torch.
Yeah, we take a lot from Cage as well.
Yeah, I will say, I saw Cage the Elephant in October, and it's hands down the best live show that I've ever been to.
Yeah, I think with our songwriting and kind of song, like our formula is how we do it, is we kind of mix up a lot of those 90s alt 2000s bands and kind of like almost 50 doo-wop and 60s pop bands like Roy Orbison, Paul Anka, and try to like make it work like that. Definitely we all grew up on those 90s alt and 2000s alt bands.
when we write a song, Sean basically just shows up, and then we all just play what makes sense and what sounds good to us, and then that's how it becomes a song. So whatever music taste each of us have as individuals definitely goes into the songs directly because we just write them spontaneously.
In terms of the shaping of Fear Not, I mean, the name itself is so obvious because of the connection to the band name, and yet at the same time, it's, you know, it's pretty clever.
Yeah, that's
thank you, man. So this next one, I wanted to call it For Not, but they were like, that's dumb, we're not doing it.
You're on the nose, man, we can't.
How about Fur Not?
Honestly, that might be easier for people to type in when I tell it to them. Whenever I'm like, yeah, we're the Fur Nats, they're like, F-U-R? It's like, no.
And what about the photo for the cover? How did you guys arrange that?
Take it away, Sean.
Yeah, so that was kind of a concept that me and my ex-girlfriend, actually, Chanel, we kind of worked together on, and we wanted something that was really, that kind of popped out of people. We liked, like, the Lichtenstein pop art aspect of things. We liked really vibrant colors. But, yeah, so we just kind of took that, really played with contrasts, and we knew we wanted, I think the theme of the album was kind of, I think, only thing almost high school in general. I wrote most of the songs in junior and senior year of high school. So, and like, you know, all high school boys, I think their fascination is on opposite gender. You know, just love songs in general, weed, alcohol, first for everything. So.
Fruit?
Oh yeah, no. I guess we do have kind of a fruit motif going on.
We love that shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a great, like, natural plants like that in general. It's just such an easy thing to, like, you know, you say strawberry and everyone can imagine a strawberry, and then from there, like, they make that kind of connection. Like, strawberries are sweet. Maybe our song "Strawberry" is sweet.
I think we're all about, like, using imagery that everyone likes. Like, whether it's like, if we felt like getting into using pizza or Chinese food as imagery, we would do that because, you know, honestly, who disagrees with pizza and Chinese food and fruit being good?
Well, I just noticed you had, you know, fruit in some of the song titles with, like, tangerine and strawberries, and then there's fruit, like, spread out on the cover. There's, like, a banana and an orange. And
yeah, I think, honestly, for the album cover, we just thought the fruit would look good and that the color would contrast really well with the green and the grass and the background with the picnic. For these song titles, those are a bit more personal, I guess. With Tangerines, that's a sadder song. Tangerines is something that, I don't know. It's like sharing, like, a cutie. Like, hey, you want a tangerine? And, you know, the person's like, yeah, like, everyone, no one's going to turn out a tangerine, as well as a strawberry. No one's going to turn out a strawberry. But I will say for Strawberry, a lot of people think that song is about, like, I don't know, like, chopping up a fruit salad or, you know, being in love and stuff. But it's about a serial killer. So I was really into Dexter at the time.
Take my chances, or I hope you will behave. Where the sun lies, sky is so blue, but I like to think it's just for you. Just call me up soon, be in my room. I swear I'll stay up to just past two.
I've seen that. I've seen every episode of Dexter.
Yeah.
Speaking of shows, I was wondering whether you guys were happy that Gendry got Storm's End.
Dude, I'm so fucking happy. I called that shit out from 3 years ago.
Oh yeah.
When I saw that, my jaw hit the floor. I started jumping around and screaming. I was with my girlfriend at the time. I lost my shit. I was like, called it. In a Fernet song. Book it.
We have that on record.
Yeah, that's awesome. Although he hasn't gotten the girl yet. So it's kind of a tough look for our guy Gendry.
To quote the Lonely Island, it doesn't matter, head sick. Gendry.
Saw it on TV.
Yeah.
It's HBO.
It's the Baratheon way to be turned down by Stark.
Dude, damn. A Griffin with the lore moment right there.
Although, in the first episode, they're talking about, Robert's talking about getting their children together. Not referring, obviously, to Arya and Gendry, but...
No, but it happened. They joined their houses. I know the quote.
Yeah. It happened in the end. I thought that, I was not expecting that when I was listening to the album. I'm like, I am definitely a Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire, like, uber fan.
Actually, that's a funny, like, short story. I got to the house where we all hang out, and the guys were like, hey, we have this cool, like, 30-second clip. That's just, like, this sound effect. We put a bunch of effects on. Can you think of something to say for 30 seconds over it? And I was like, well... I have this pretty highly upvoted, like, post on Reddit about a theory I have on Game of Thrones. Why don't I just summarize that?
Remember at the end of season 2 of Game of Thrones when Gendry just sails off into the ocean in his rowboat? What if he just, like, came back with an army and took over his dad, Bobby Baratheon's castle in the Stormlands? Like, what would Cersei do? What would Daenerys do? Everyone would be so confused.
Yeah, Kurzawa just says a bunch of weird shit, so we were like, who'd be perfect for interlude?
Yeah, man, I just talk. I have a bad singing voice, so I might as well talk about something nerdy that I'm passionate about.
Andy, since this is coming out before the last two episodes, anything that you want to call now? Any deep dive, like, theories that you want to go to? It doesn't have to be main character or main thing at all.
No, nothing super deep, because honestly, I've been disappointed with the show in terms of depth on this season as a book reader. But calling it, Daenerys is dead, Jon's going to take the throne, and then something's going to happen to him, then he's going to be gone, and Sansa's on the throne at the end. Fucking book it.
I think the finale will end with Bran, modern day, in a Starbucks. And he's just chilling, and he wards back, puts a Starbucks cup there, gets all the editors from HBO, everyone fired, so the spinoffs are going to do, and boom, it's a reality TV show.
I'm with it. The Hound needs to fight his brother. Clegane Bowl has to happen.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Yeah, Clegane Bowl, get out the air horns, everybody. Clegane Bowl is happening.
Well, if you ask me, I hope to see the wheel broken. I hope to see the throne destroyed. And we have a more democratic realm And I really do hope to see John live and be reunited with Ghost and give Ghost the love that he fucking deserves.
The Ghost got his ear fucking blown off.
And he's okay. Not getting anything for it.
Here's my theory. Brienne goes, fuck it. Fuck this. Fuck Jamie. Goes up north. She's like, Tormund, I'm here.
Take me to Tormund.
She deserves it. At this point, she really does.
Yep. Better than Sheila.
That's true. But thinking about Game of Thrones, and if the government collapsed, do you really think it would turn into like some kind of cool democracy? Like, that universe, everyone's fucking crazy. Like, it would just be a bloodbath.
Yeah, but Sam and Frodo are going to drop the ring.
No, but we're always better off with a more localized government. You know, the more local the government, the better.
That's true. That's what the Targaryens fixed, and maybe everyone else is going to unfix it by making it more localized again. Balkanize the Westeros, that's what I say.
So I'm all for like a free North, you know, ruled by the North. Same thing with the Iron Islands, with Dorne, all of it. They should all rule themselves, and then you know some sort of loose alliance of states or countries.
I mean, I'm all for some sort of anarcho socialist. Utopia.
Dude, let's just make Bernie Sanders president of Westeros.
So
let's just
an
skip a couple steps and go
it's
for
a good
the best
start.
Version of reality.
I want UBI too.
Unburned.
Bernie 2020. Yeah, the
unburned.
Oh, yeah. Feeling the unburned. Yeah, Bernie 2020. While we have this platform, I'll shout that one out.
All right, so back to the music a little bit. In terms of how that album turned out, what are your favorite songs to listen to off the album? What are your favorite songs to play?
I will say before anybody who was actually on that album answers, Tangerine was my go-to song whenever I was feeling like a sad boy. And I will forever stand that song.
Lost in translation, I don't understand. Heart in pieces, don't ask me where I stand. I'm alone again, on my own again, but I guess I'm okay. She don't care for me like I cared for her, do she now? I'm dying, but at least I'm life. She told me that she loved me, it ain't in her eyes.
as someone who's in the band, I think Tangerine is probably the best sounding song recording wise on the album, but Dreams is probably my favorite.
Okay, I think my favorite song on that album, like, to listen to, oh god, this feels a little like conceited to say, but it's probably Damage. That's the one song I get to, like, I take lead vocals on, and I just, actually, no, I feel like, okay, so that is the one that I definitely enjoy playing live the most, because I get to take live vocals, I take lead vocals for it, and usually we do it at the end of the set, so I'm able to kind of go like, okay, this is it, I can go all out, and everyone's going to love it. But then to listen to, that's kind of, I feel like, honestly, it might be Trainspotted. And maybe it's because of the associations I just have with the song. I think that was, like, one of the first songs that we'd, like, written for that album.
That was the first song I ever practiced with you guys on drums.
Because of the associations I have with that song, and just, like, even if it doesn't, like, I think, you know, when we play it live, it definitely sounds better than the recorded version, but, like, still, I can hear the recorded version, and I can kind of think about all of the work that's gone into it, how many turns it's taken. It's kind of nice to finally, like, listen to it and hear it all come to fruition, you know?
I think my favorite song off that album is probably, honestly, the one I probably listen to most is the interlude. for me, it's like I wrote all the songs, like the skeleton structure of the songs in like high school. And now it's like, you know, 3 years later, 4 years later, so now I'm like, okay, I don't really like any of these songs. I think, you know, maybe as a fool, I think I'm a better vocalist now than I was then.
You're better.
Thank you, Chris. But, you know, I think the interlude is like the one I show to people. I'm like, hey, like, you know, like, my band's all right. Like, you know, if you like Game of Thrones, here's a fucking interlude to our album. But as far as structurally, I like Strawberry the best, I think. Strawberry is one that I had a lot of fun writing, and that was like the first song I kind of challenged myself to write on things not as immediate. Or it was probably the one I had the most fun writing. I think I also had a lot of fun writing Damn Lady, because it wasn't like in my head, it wasn't me singing it was Griffin. So it was one of those songs where it was like, okay, like, yeah, maybe like, how do I write a song for another person? And then, I mean, it just kind of happened. Even though it's really simple, it's probably the simplest song on the album. As far as that goes, as far as musically, it's like, you know, five chords, you know, four and a half probably. But it's just a lot of fun live. And yeah.
Yeah, to piggyback off that, actually, Strawberry is a great fucking song. And I'll agree with both of them that Damn Lady is probably the fun song to play live from the album.
Thank you.
Backing off of that real quick, whenever I listen to Strawberry, I'm just like, oh my god, why is it so slow?
That's what I was just thinking. When I first showed my a lot of my friends and my family that song, they were like, we're 50 and this is slow.
Yeah. I didn't know what BPM was. I didn't know what the fuck this was. So when I was like, is this BPM all right? I was like, you know what? Yeah. And then it's kind of happened. I think we played a lot. We don't really play it live anymore, but when we did play it live, we played it a lot faster.
Sean is smart, but he can't really count to four. He can barely count to six. At least not evenly.
Well, for most bands, all you really have to do is be able to count to four. So you can do that.
We're working on
it. We count to four and we count to six, so we switch between the two a lot.
I just kind of flip it over.
Playing in six is always tough.
Yeah. Well, what's really funny is Sean will be like adamant that a song is in 4/4, and we're like, Sean, this song is in 6/8, and you just don't know what you're talking about.
It's like count like 1 and 2 and 3 and it'll make a lot more sense.
4/4 is the only time signature that matters. It's the only one that makes sense to me. I'm gonna stick by it. I don't care if it's in 3/4, 6/8, 12. 13, you know.
I remember one time, I forget which song it was, but I think it was Tonight. We started practicing a Tonight one day, and we played for a solid, like, 2 or 3 run-throughs, and Griffin's like, this is not feeling right. I don't know what's going on. And then I look at him, like, guys, the song is in 6/8. And then Griffin's just like, oh, right. And then Sean's just like, what?
I actually agree with Sean, 4/4 for life, dude. I can't tell the difference.
And
okay, so to anyone who might be disheartened from listening to us because of this, just let it be known that the actual rhythm section does in fact know the difference between 4/4 and 6/8.
Where it matters.
Hey, guitar's where it's at, baby.
Yeah.
No one ever thinks the vocalist knows how to count. Like, no one expects that of them, so.
I don't even sing live. I use backing tracks. So. Yeah.
So was it hard to carry on the band, like, after high school and go into college and that whole thing? Has it been a challenge?
I honestly I've seen a lot where bands break up after they're not all in the same geographic location. I think with me it was easy because I knew I like always wanted to like play with these guys. They give me real sweet looks right now. But,
it goes back to the start where we were all talking about how we're friends.
But yeah, like, it was a thing where it's like, I liked playing with these guys. When I went down to VCU, I was like, okay, now we can play in Richmond more often. It was never like, okay, I mean, it's definitely harder than if we were all in the same house or if we were all in the same neighborhood. But at the same time, especially with technology, how it is nowadays, where we have group chat on like 3 different mediums. We're not really stressed about anything as a band. Like, we do it because we have fun, and if something comes out of it that's bigger than having fun, then, we're down for it. But
I think we're really lucky in that, we have a really good cohesion with each other, and because of the distance between Sean and the rest of us, sometimes we'll go a fair amount of time without practicing, but like at the end of the day, I can't really speak for anyone else, but for me, like, any of our songs, it's a muscle memory thing. I just kind of have them at this point, so it doesn't matter. Like, it's not like we have to worry too much about having like a good routine. It ends up just being like, hey, we have the show that we've agreed that we can play at this time. Let's like all meet up, and then like right before we can run through everything, make sure we're all on the same page, and then just go and do it. And I think that really helps a lot because we don't have to worry about things like, I feel a little pretentious saying that, but
if anything, all 4 of us like not living either in the same house or right on top of each other has helped us, because it's never given us an opportunity to have a major argument between band members. Like, we all just get to be friends and live apart from each other and be friends and play Dungeons and Dragons and make music and like hang out and just have a good time. and we don't have to have the drama of real life crashing in because we don't live together. And there's no stakes to our relationship other than being in the Fernets.
Yeah, but I mean, and you got to think of that, like, Curtis doesn't have a belly button, which is obviously, like,
also in addition to not having a belly button, I was born on Easter Sunday, I'd like to state. So I might be a miracle, I might not, I might be the second coming. It's up to you to decide.
Weird flex, but okay.
So what, other than... Other than bringing back the New Jerusalem, what is the
don't
direction?
Oh man!
What is the direction for the band? Like, what do you guys?
That's up to Sean.
We're probably
really
breaking up next week, honestly.
No, I mean, if you're gonna ask anyone about direction, that'd probably be Sean, since he writes the lyrics and the chords. So Sean, what are we doing? Is it funk? Is that it?
Are you asking as far as like music or just,
yeah, I mean, what are you guys listening to right now? What kind of
car seat,
you know, what
funk,
what
car
are,
seat headrest. Literally garbage music. I will agree with Griffin.
Wait, I'm sorry, could you finish your question?
Okay. I was gonna say what songs do you have that are coming out, and what are, you know, sort of the basis for those songs, and where can we expect to hear you play them?
So we've got a whole dang album coming out. It's being mastered right now, actually, as we speak. And so it's going to be 11 songs. And it's basically kind of showcasing, you know, I think El Dorado was really basic starter, you know, if we were like a Kanto region, I think El Dorado would be Bulbasaur, and, you know, Fear Not was probably like Ivysaur, like kind of the evolution of it, and then you have this new album, which is probably like the final evolution of Venusaur, but then, you know, you still have like the Mega Evolution and stuff coming up. But anyway, you know, I think this new album coming up is really going to showcase us pushing our boundaries and like kind of what we're comfortable with songwriting wise. We're not really sure when it's going to be released, probably around July.
I'd say mid to late summer would be a good guess.
Yeah, but we have a single out on Spotify, Apple, all the streaming music services. No cassettes, though.
Yeah, we'll see when the whole album's out. We'll see if we can make that happen.
But, I mean, I think musically speaking, we're kind of diving more into what can we do outside of what we've already done, which I guess is what all bands do. But
I mean, the whole thing is recorded, but I don't know if I'm supposed to tease this. There's going to be another interlude. So, I don't know. It might not be Game of Thrones related at all, but it's going to happen.
It might happen.
Hopefully it's going to happen. The guys, I'll just talk about Game of Thrones again. I don't care.
To kind of elaborate on what Sean and Curtis have said, to me, like, with this new album, it's kind of been, like, a situation where it's, like, when you listen to our first EP or our first full length album, it's like, yes, you can hear the songs and you can connect it to our band and everything like that. But like, I don't know. I personally, whenever I hear them, it doesn't sound like something that, like any of the other songs that I usually listen to. But I think with this next album, it's something that I would like, if I was just a random person who wasn't involved in the Fernets, it would be an album that I would actually listen to and enjoy, and I wouldn't think of it differently than any other album that I'm listening to on Spotify or Apple Music or anything like that, which is kind of important to me, at least, as a musician. You know, I want to make sure that other people will be able to listen to this and kind of think, oh, these are just run-of-the-mill musicians. There's nothing like lower about them or anything like that. Even though we're maybe not putting as much money into it, it's reaching a certain level of quality, you know? I think that's just kind of, we're trying to mature as musicians at the end of the day, always. And I think this is just another step in that direction.
I totally agree. I'm really excited about the way all of our new music sounds. And I'm really excited about how much better the music sounds, like the literal audio fidelity of it. It sounds good on whatever systems we've listened to it on. I'm excited. People can listen to it and be like, not all the way like, oh, wow, this is super pro record deal quality, but it's definitely a step up from our previous releases, so I'm excited.
Well, I like the way that the last album sounded, so I hope it doesn't go too far from your roots.
You'll still be happy, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't want to discount everything else that we've done, but, you know, there's always room for improvement, you know? And I think we found a little bit of room there with this next album. I'm just really excited to be able to show it to people and say, you know, this is the next step that we've taken, and then, you know, who knows where we're going to go next.
Well, so are you guys playing Richmond? Are you going to go anywhere else on the East Coast?
We're actually playing a number of different shows in the near future.
In general, Richmond's our spot, though.
Yeah, Richmond
like 80% of our shows are probably in Richmond.
Richmond is very kind to us, yes, but like in the near future, I mean,
we're playing Electric Maid.
In D.C. on Wednesday,
the
15th?
Yeah, we're probably a little late for, like, you know,
promotion.
Publishing this. but, I mean, that's going to, you know, maybe someone will be at the show.
In August, we're going on a 17-day tour, kind of all over. We're going to start in Nashville and go down to Georgia and South Carolina, North Carolina, you know, see some alligators, and then, you know, go up north to end up in Brooklyn. And we're going on that tour with, like, really good friends from New York, Fox Hollow. It's a really good band.
And more up your alley in June, we're going to play a show here in Reston at an underground location that is going to be very fun and very awesome and very, very Reston DIY.
Yeah, actually, this is
totally up your alley.
I just didn't know when the right time to kind of pitch this would be, but, like, yeah, June 16th, it's going to be us and then Cold Beaches, who are also, she's also a Reston native, but she lives in Chicago now, but she's coming back, and it's going to be a great thing. And we have, oh, my God, we have two other bands whose names are escaping me right now.
Yeah, Nah.
Nah, yes. And then there's another one whose name is still escaping me, unfortunately. But both of them are also local bands, so that's going to be a great time for everyone, the musicians and the listeners. And that would be a great opportunity to hear some of the newer stuff that we're doing, because honestly, like, for the past year, like, we've had these things written and pretty much done. It's just a matter of, you know, getting the recordings out and everything like that. So we've been, like, playing a lot of our new stuff live, more than we have been, fear not. Faded Home was the other band. So it's going to be the Fernats, Nah, Faded Home, and Cold Beaches on June 16th.
Here in Reston.
In a Reston basement show, which are the best shows.
Absolutely. And we're pretty much the only people to put those on anymore. So,
well, as far as we know, maybe we're not cool enough for the
other
ones.
Maybe there's someone super underground that's just, like, digging under us and putting on these shows.
Well, that, you know, my listeners will be happy to hear that there's still shows like that going on in Reston.
It's far between, but we do what we can with the police, I guess.
People will be thrilled to hear that that's still happening with the kids. And hopefully if you guys are playing in July, if there's any chance, you know, you are welcome to play at a Jam for Man and be able to say that you played Jam for Man. So we'll keep a spot warm for you if you're able to make it to the Jam for Man show in July.
Sounds great.
Keep that very hot, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be hot. They're
oh,
gonna
beautiful.
Be, they're gonna be,
I'm sweating already.
No, this is getting uncomfortable, honestly.
But it's going to be, I think, four bands at least of, you know, Reston natives who played the original Jam for Man shows. So you get a chance to hear some of those guys. And
that sounds amazing. Yeah, we're awesome. You can't see us, but we're literally all looking.
Yeah, we're just like looking at each other, nodding. Like, yeah.
Yes, we're totally in. That sounds
and
great.
What they're doing today. So that would be awesome to have you be a part of it, because it would be really cool for, you know, the history of Reston and sort of like modern Reston to get together and, you know, just rock the shit out of a place.
That would be very awesome, man. We're excited.
And for a good cause, too.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, guys, it has been an honor to have you on the show. You guys are
wonderful being here.
You guys are great. I love what you're doing. I love the fact that, you know, you're keeping live music going in Reston, and I really hope to get a chance to see you guys play live, because that's what we wanna hear, live music.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. Thank you so much.
Oh yeah,
man.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
You're awesome. It's been wonderful.
You don't have to trust in yourself. Well, I don't think I trust you myself. Well, you don't.